this is Shell versus the Universe. Not sure what episode now, completely lost track. This episode is about parthenogenesis. Yes, I'm shocked that I can pronounce that as well. But it's because I said it like 20 billion times before I pressed record, just so that it would roll off my tongue. I'm definitely going to struggle to say it at some point. But it's basically it's a way of females being able to fertilize an egg without sperm. And it happens in insects, reptiles, and some birds. And it can be sort of induced in some mammals. But that's pretty much an ongoing scientific experiment. So we're basically going to dive into that. But I know what you're thinking. Like, how does Shell just go about her life naturally and come across something as complex as parthenogenesis? It's because I basically went into like this YouTube rabbit hole and ended up getting really into ball python breeding and snake breeding in general. And I basically really now want to own a banana pinstripe ball python, but I'm nowhere near ready because I'm not scared of the snakes. I'm scared of the things that I have to feed to the snakes. Like, I don't like rats and mice. I just don't. I don't know how I deal with. And also, they say like you keep one in your freezer and then thaw it out. I'm like, what, in my freezer with my actual food? That seems gross. I'd have to get a whole other freezer and a whole other fridge because you have to thaw it out in the fridge too. It just seems very expensive and a bit gross. So if you find a vegan snake, hit me up because I'm very interested. But anyway, yeah, that's basically how I learned about it, because there was this, I think it was a boa constrictor. That's a loud aeroplane. Thanks, aeroplane, for being loud and obnoxious. Anyway, probably didn't even pick it up on the recording and I'm there moaning. What was I saying? Oh yeah, there was a boa constrictor that basically was bred in captivity, was never, ever, ever around another male boa constrictor. And it produced some eggs that were fertilized, and they were like, how's this even happened? And then they double checked all the snakes that had been around just to make sure that they hadn't been like wrongly sexed. And it was right, yeah, this snake had not been around any male snakes, which only led to one conclusion, and that's that it, you know, it did a parthenogenesis thing. And some snakes will do that if like out in the wild, like if they're out in the wild and like they haven't come across a male, they will start to just go, fuck it, I'm not going to find one. I'm just going to... It's basically like, you know, when a woman gets to like 49, really wants a kid and still hasn't met a decent bloke, she's like, oh, fuck it, I'll do IVF. It's like that a little bit. The snake's like, oh, there ain't no men around here. I need to reproduce at some point. So fuck it, I may as well just do it now and just do it myself. And they have this thing within them where they can do it themselves. And then also, I also found out a thing, yeah, where some male snakes, once they've like done the breeding thing, they'll just like give up and die. Even though they're dead healthy and everything, they'll just die because they're like, job's done. Can you imagine? Anyway, that's neither here nor there. I just thought I'd bring that into the mix. Let's get a little bit deeper on the whole parthenogenesis thing, because I've got a lot to tell you that you probably already know. So yeah, basically parthenogenesis is a reproduction without fertilization. An egg can develop into an embryo without being fertilized by sperm. It's derived Parthenogenesis is derived from the Greek word virgin birth, which had me thinking. Yes, we're going to get into that, but not until later on. Bear with me. Several insect species, including apids, which I think are spiders, bees and ants, are known to reproduce this way. Obviously other things as well, like snakes, lizards. Did it say lizards there? No, but I know lizards can do it. The Komodo dragon, for example, can fucking do it. It's the largest lizard in the world and it can reproduce this way. However, she can only produce male offspring. Now, this is interesting because later on we're going to find out that males, well, now we're going to find out, sorry, that mammals, not males, mammals, if they were to do the whole parthenogenesis thing, I make it sound like it's some sort of new dance. Anyway, if mammals do it, they only create females. So it's interesting to know that the Komodo dragon, when they do it, they produce males, but it gets sick. Sick as in bad, not sick as in this is sick, fam. Anyway, she can only produce male offspring. She needs to mate with a male to produce female offspring. Fortunately, it says, this is where it gets really gross, by the way. Fortunately, by producing male offspring with parthenogenesis, the female can always ensure there's a male to mate with her son. Ew. Anyway. There's also a lizard that's called a whiptail lizard. This is, they are absolutely fascinating. The New Mexico whiptail lizards, I don't know if it's every whiptail lizard or just the ones that live in New Mexico, they are an all-female species because of parthenogenesis. They even have female-to-female courtships, which I don't understand, because if you can reproduce by yourself, why are you trying to court another female unless it's just for jokes? That's like, you know, yeah. I mean, we've all been there, fam. Recreational lesbianism. What do you know about it? Anyway, you'd assume that that means all babies are genetic clones of their mothers. However, these New Mexico whiptails have a special little trick. The females can gain twice the number of chromosomes, so the eggs get a full chromosome count and genetic variety and breadth. This is called genetic recombination. It's how genes without a genome, it's how genes without a genome can get muddled up a bit during meiosis, leading to increased diversity. However, it can also lead to some genetic disorders like cancer or Down syndrome. Yeah, that's weird. Parthenogenesis in sharks has been confirmed in at least three species. The bonnet head, the black something, and the zebra shark. Honestly, my handwriting is appalling. Black something? The black tip! The black tip shark. Sorry, it literally looked like black BP. I'd done the TI too close together, and you're not finding this very funny, are you? Neither am I. Anyway. There are no known causes of naturally occurring mammalian parthenogenesis in the wild. So it doesn't occur in the wild with mammals. Parthenogenetic pregnancy of mammals would have a ZX chromosomes and would therefore be female. I'm just going to say that sentence even though I don't understand it, because you might go, oh, whereas I'm just going, huh? Anyway, in 1936, Gregory Goodwin Pincus reported successfully inducing parthenogenesis in a rabbit. So it can be produced in scientific labs and stuff, but mammals can't do it naturally by themselves. So that sort of hints to where the Virgin Mary and Jesus Christ thing is going to go. Helen Spurway, a geneticist specialising in the reproductive biology of the guppy, which is a fish, I've owned a few, claimed in 1955 that parthenogenesis, which occurs in a guppy in nature, may also occur very rarely in the human species. She has nothing to back up this claim, I don't think, she's just saying it. Anyway, in April 2004, scientists in Tokyo used parthenogenesis successfully to create a fatherless mouse, and have subsequently shown that fatherless mice have enhanced longevity, which is mad interesting. Like, I always assumed that not having a baby father would make the mother's life a lot easier, a lot less stressful, therefore she might live longer. But the child, yes, I am definitely taking that on somebody else. Induced parthenogenesis in mice and monkeys often results in abnormal development. This is because mammals have imprinted genetic regions where either the maternal or paternal chromosome is inactivated in the offspring in order for development to proceed naturally. A mammal created by parthenogenesis would have double doses of maternally imprinted genes and lack paternally imprinted genes, leading to developmental abnormalities. As a consequence, research on human parthenogenesis is focused on the production of embryonic stem cells for use in medical treatment and not as a reproductive strategy. So that basically shows you that, you know, it's not necessarily the fact that females can be out here breeding by ourselves, unfortunately. I joke. It's more of a fact that, you know, we can create these embryos that we can then take the stem cells from and help people. I don't understand it, but that's basically what they're doing right there and there. Right there and there, fam. I'm on top form today. To be honest, all of this actually reminds me of a documentary I've been meaning to watch for a fucking... Well, I have watched it. I watched it years ago. It was on, like, BBC or something. I think it was, like, in the early 2010s that I watched it. Or maybe late 2000s. And it was about how basically if you're like basically if you have a baby with someone that's from a completely different region of the world to you, then that baby is going to have it's going to have a better chance of not getting any of the genetic things that can happen. So like basically, you know how apparently it said on this documentary, I wish I could remember the name of it so I could find it and rewatch it, because I'm going off of like my memory, but I remember it strongly. They said that people from India are known to have like cardio problems, like problems with their hearts, that heart disease. Basically, so like if you're Indian and you have a baby with an Indian, then that baby is probably going to get heart disease at some point, because a lot of Indians are genetically prone to have heart disease. Whereas if you're Indian, you have a baby with an English person, then that baby is going to like be half as likely to, you know, I mean, obviously English people get heart disease as well, but I'm just saying like in the populations, it's found more. Do you know what I'm saying? And like there's other things like that as well. And basically what the science behind it was, basically have a baby with someone that's from a different part of the world of you, and like the more diverse, and then if your baby does the same thing, then by the end of it you got a baby that's a third this, a third that, a third of something else, and rah, 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 then they're gonna be like, you know, just the opposite. You know, like how if you keep inbreeding and they get ill, well it's like the opposite, if you know what I mean. I found that out, and if someone else saw that documentary and can remember it or can find some sort of scientific thing to back it up, please show me, because I've been trying to find it ever since. But yeah, I thought that was really interesting when I heard that, and it does sort of tie in loosely to what we're talking about here. But anyway, now it's time for us to visit the saltiest website ever on earth that I have found, apart from the Shade Room. But basically, there's this website, it's a crev.info, never heard of it before. I just googled parthenogenesis and Jesus, and this is the first thing that came up. And it's called Jesus Was Not a Product of Parthenogenesis. Now I'm going to be breaking this down, because you've basically got the people that are writing the argument, the article, so the salty people. In fact, I've got his name right here, David F. Coppedge. David F. Coppedge is a salty guy, right? And then you've got this, he's quoting the scientists that he's not happy about. So, you know, I'll try and do voices. Anyway, so the salty David said, secular scientists are free to disbelieve in the virgin birth, but should at least try to understand what they are denying, says David, with no scientific background. Anyway, Current Biology published a blooper. Why is man calling it a blooper? Current Biology published a paper. David's being salty and calling it a fucking blooper. Anyway, in a dispatch, why does that word sound funny to me all of a sudden? In a dispatch on the subject of parthenogenesis, Casper J. Van der Kooi and Tanya Schwander, fucking love that name, from the University of Lausanne, did fine discussing fish, moths and reptiles, but they really should have stayed out of the theology of the biblical interpretation. Man's salty! Man's like, stay out of it, yeah? You don't know what you're fucking talking about, fam. That's what he's being like. What they basically said, they said, the phenomenon of virgin birth has long fascinated scientists and laymen alike. The first account of parthenogenesis in literature is the prophecy of Jesus Christ's birth in Isaiah 7:14. Therefore, the Lord himself will give you a sign. The virgin will conceive and give birth to a son and will call him Emmanuel. Wait one goddamn minute. I thought we called him Jesus. Why is she calling him Jesus when she got specifically told to call him Emmanuel? What? What? I need a minute. I genuinely need a minute to be like, what? Anyway, this reference to parthenogenesis is unusual in two ways. First, it is the only account of natural parthenogenesis in a mammal. Mammals are believed to be completely unable to reproduce via parthenogenesis because of a number of developmental and genetic constraints. Second, while the Blessed Virgin Mary might have been able to conceive a daughter via parthenogenesis, the conception of a son is highly unlikely, as male sex in humans is determined by genes on the Y chromosome. Mary as a woman could not have transmitted any Y chromosomes to her offspring. So the scientists are backing this up, like, yo, we've got receipts. Stop being so salty. We have the receipts. We can't do this. So why are you telling us we can? Anyway, Salty David goes on to say, this is a setup for a put-down. Van der Kooi and Schwander clearly misrepresent the nature of Christ's birth. Luke 1:31-35 states clearly that Mary's human egg was miraculously completed by God the Holy Spirit. I'm sorry, David, but that says fuck all. It says fuck all. Anyway, I'm not getting into, and by the way, this isn't me digging like on Christians or any sort of belief at all. Like, this is more me having a go at this guy who wrote this fucking article. Like, stop being so fucking salty. Anyway, apparently Luke 1:31-35, which is apparently a counter argument to the fact that female humans can't create males. This is the argument back from the Bible. He will be great and he will be called the Son of the Most High, and the Lord God will give to him the throne of his father David. Wait. Now who's this David? David and Emmanuel, like what? I thought it was Joseph and Jesus, or God and Jesus, depending on how you want to look at. Who the fuck's David? I'm so confused. Anyway. And the Lord God will give to him the throne of his father David, 33. Now, I don't know if that means David, 33, as in David was 33 years old, but there's a 33 there after a comma, so I don't know. And he will reign over the house of Jacob forever. Who the fuck's Jacob? I'm not being funny, but am I the only one that's like, who are these people? Like, I went to Sunday school, so I don't understand why I don't know who Emmanuel, David and Jacob are. Weird. The house of Jacob forever, and of his kingdom there will be no end. And Mary said to the angel, how will this be, since I am a virgin? And the angel answered her, the Holy Spirit will come upon you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you. Therefore the child to be born will be called Holy, the Son of God. I'm sorry, but what part of that overrides the argument of a female human can't produce a Y chromosome to make a man? What part of that overrides the argument? None of it. So Salty David needs to be quiet. Anyway, They said that this mistake undermines their whole argument, but then the biologists make another mistake at the end of their article. Salty David still being fucking salty. The scientists say, so, could accidental parthenogenesis in humans ever give rise to a new parthenogenic lineage? Probably not, as the developmental and genetic constraints in humans and other mammals would most likely prevent the emergence of adaptive parthenogenesis in natural populations. As it turns out, even the most famous speculation about parthenogenesis, Jesus Christ's birth, owes its existence not to a miracle, but to a human error during the translation of Isaiah 7:14 from Hebrew to Greek. The Hebrew word Alma can refer to a young woman of marriageable age, whether married or not. The young woman became a virgin in the Gospel according to Matthew when Alma was translated as the Greek Parthenos. So, basically, the scientists have come up with a very reasonable and understanding thing where they're like, they didn't mean virgin, they just meant young woman. A young woman is going to have a baby and that's going to be God's son. But then the guy just gets even more saltier. It gets worse, man. Salty David goes on to say, here, Van der Kooi and Schwander err on in their biblical interpretation, For one, just because Alma can refer to a woman of marriageable age, it doesn't mean it does. But he goes on to say, the context has to be understood. Even if Isaiah's prophecy had a short-term fulfillment before its ultimate fulfillment, the prophecy of a married woman having a baby would hardly be a sign that happens every day. That's not what they were trying to say, mate. They weren't trying to say it could be a married or unmarried woman. What they're saying is that it didn't necessarily mean she was a fucking virgin. What they meant was it could, like, there was no immaculate conception. It was just a translation gaffe, you dick. Anyway, what did he go on to say now? Even naming it Emmanuel would not be surprising. A sign had to point to something special and unique. Second, they ignore the Luke passages quoted above. Third, they ignore other passages that refer to Christ's unique sonship. I'm sorry that the scientists ignored the fucking Bible and went to do the actual scientific fucking experiments instead. I'm sorry, Salty David. I'm sorry that happened to you. Fucking hell. Did anyone else feel sorry for his mother? I certainly do. Fucking hell. This guy is just proper salty. He also says that Galatians 4:45 is an argument against all this as well. Which basically says, but when the fullness of time has come, God sent forth his son, born of woman, born under the law, to redeem those who were under the law, so that we might receive adoption as sons. I'm fucking sorry, but what? I don't even understand what that actually genuinely means, let alone what it's trying to fucking argue against. I hate it when people are like, no, and then start quoting the Bible at me. Like, are you mad? Like, I understand, I respect your belief and everything, but when we're looking for actual scientific arguments, I don't think the Bible's the one. Do you know what I mean? This is a scientific debate now. But trust me, yeah, listen to the way man finishes this article. He says, Salty David said, if secular biologists demand that theologians stay out of science, then they should keep their materialist hands out of theology and exegesis. Like, fuck off, David. Who the fuck are you? Like, this is honestly a mad article. And someone please explain to me who fucking Emmanuel and David are, and why Jesus wasn't named Emmanuel, and why Joseph isn't known as David. And who is David? Is God's name David? Mad one. Mad. Absolutely mad. So while we're on the subject, I just want to reiterate again, I'm not taking the piss out of anybody's beliefs at all. I'm only taking a piss out of the guy who wrote this article, because there's no need to be so fucking salty. There really isn't. I just wanted to say that basically my belief is that, you know, yeah, this guy probably did exist. He was probably amazing in that, but I don't think it was parthenogenesis or immaculate conception that happened. Do you know what I'm saying? Because it doesn't seem possible. But at least parthenogenesis is leading the way in stem cell research, which is a really good thing. So I'm going to read out something here that I really don't understand myself, but someone else probably will. So it's a nice way to end the whole parthenogenesis thing. On June 26, 2007, the International Stem Cell Corporation announced that their lead scientist, Dr. Elena Revezoa, sorry if I mispronounced that, was the first to intentionally create human stem cells from unfertilized human eggs using parthenogenesis. This process may offer a way for creating stem cells that are genetically matched to a particular female for the treatment of degenerative diseases that might affect her. So this might actually open up the door to a whole new way of healing. I don't really understand the sentences, so I won't go too deep into it, but it seems positive and good and scientific and nice. So yeah, hope you enjoyed my little lecture on parthenogenesis. I really can say that word well now, innit? I'm so proud of myself. Woo! We're only about 20 minutes in, so I might try and squeeze something else in too. Yeah, basically, as well as parthenogenesis, there's a few other ways of reproduction that aren't your usual thing. You know, the birds and the bees. Ain't it funny how they call it the birds and the bees, when the birds and the bees are the ones that can parthenogize? Anyway, there's a thing called gynogenesis, gynogenesis. It's a form of asexual reproduction related to parthenogenesis. Here, offspring are produced by the same mechanism as parthenogenesis, but with the requirement that the egg merely be stimulated by the presence of sperm in order to develop. However, the sperm cell does not contribute any genetic material to the offspring. Since gynogenetic species are all female, activation of their eggs requires mating with males of a closely related species for the needed stimulus. Some salamanders of the genus Ambystoma are gynogenetic and appear to have been so for over a million years. It is believed that the success of those salamanders may be due to rare fertilization of eggs by males introducing new material to the gene pool, which may result from perhaps only one mating out of a million. In addition, the Amazon molly is known to reproduce by gynogenesis. I think molly is another type of fish, isn't it? Hybridogenesis is a mode of reproduction of hybrids. Hybridogenetic hybrids. What a fucking... Hybridogenetic hybrids. Fucking hell. Usually females during... Jesus, the words. During gametogenesis exclude one of the parental genomes and produce gametes with unrecombined genomes of second paternal species instead of containing mixed recombined parental genomes. First genome is restored by fertilization of these gametes with the gametes from the first species. I don't understand any of that. What the fuck? So hybridogenesis is not completely asexual, but instead hemiclonal. Half of genome is passed to the next generation clonally, unrecombined, intact. Other half sexually and combined. So that's kind of like half, it's half of the it's half parthenogenesis and half normal, I think. It's seen in some live bearing fish, as well as some Heteroflexus. Oh, green frogs or water frogs. I'm so glad it had that in the bracket, because I was like, what the fuck animal is that? So yeah, there were like so many different variations of how we can reproduce. So we need to stop calling it the birds and the bees and call it the humans and the mammals. Humans are mammals, Michelle. I know. I'm having a conversation with myself in front of other people. Great. Anyway, yeah, this has been quite a short episode. It's been about half an hour, but it'll do, innit? Like, there's a lot of things in there to sort of go away and think about for a while. I also wanted to say as well, whilst I was looking up the snakes thing, that there's a... Because basically a ball python comes in very many different morphs, which is like colour patterns and shit. So like there's a particular morph of ball python called the spider ball python. And the spider ball python is called that because it has like a spider web type pattern. But basically they've recently been banned by the local, by the UK reptile show people. Not by the government itself, but by the people that do the reptile shows in the UK, because to have the spider morph in the ball python cause neurological damage, because they have like a wobble in their head and they can't make up their up from down. So if it's really bad, they can't strike at their food, they can't coil around it. There's some horrible videos on YouTube of these snakes really struggling just to be just a snake. They struggle to snake, and it's a horrible thing to see. They can't, you know. So basically, there's the snake breeding community is like torn in two right now. They're like, half of them are like, so what? We should be able to, what's the word? Sort of police ourselves in this and decide that it's no good. And then the other lot are like, no, it needs banning, like properly banning, like the spider ball pythons. They've got neurological problems. It's not fair. We need to stop doing it. And at the end of the day, I'd have to side with them people saying, let's stop doing it, because we see the wobble and we see the fact that they can't strike for their food and stuff like that. But we're not seeing how they actually feel inside. Now, I don't want to anthropomorphize the animal. I know it's a snake. I know it's not a human. It might not have the same emotions that we have, but we don't know what it's going through. So for us to sit there and say, oh, it's only a wobble. Some of them barely wobble. Like, that's not the point. Like, they're obviously going through something that we're causing just because we like the look of it. I don't like that. It don't seem right. So if you're going to buy a ball python, please make sure it's not a spider ball python. There are plenty other morphs out there that don't have the neuro... Sorry, my child's making a hell of a noise. Probably lost on Fortnite or something. Yeah, don't buy a spider ball python. There's so many other morphs out there that are way more, you know, just as beautiful. There's a banana ball python, my actual favourite. There's so many. And just snakes in general are just fucking awesome. I love them. I need to get over my fear of mice and rats and stuff. So, yeah, that's today's episode. Next week's episode, or just the next episode, I don't know when it's going to fucking come out, all right? But the next episode is going to be a real in-depth look on a missing persons case that I've been obsessed with since 2016. I've been that obsessed with it that I actually got quite involved in the web sleuth side of it and the Reddit side of it, where some really weird shit happened that I witnessed by myself. I can actually say I saw this weird shit happen. So we're going to get into that. I'm going to do that really soon, to be honest, because I'm really, really into it, and I know most of it off by heart because it's like something that I've witnessed myself. So that'd be quite cool. In between then and now, I have a Twitter. I can't remember the handle, but go on Twitter, search for Shell versus the Universe. You're going to find it, I think. Okay. I also have a Facebook group called Shell versus the Universe. Search for that, join. I'm on there. I post shit on there all the time. I'm also on Gmail. Email me at shellvsuniverse@gmail.com. There's no the in there, and I really regret that. I also have a Patreon as well. If you feel like donating to the Patreon, because I don't just do podcasts. I do podcasts, I do poetry, I do watercolours, I rap as well. So anything that I get from my Patreon basically goes into all of that, and I'm going to look at doing some exclusive podcasts just for my Patreons. So to find me, go on to Patreon and search Shell Creates, and I'm right there. Yeah, so you can either sign up to one of the tiers where you'll get some artwork from me, or you can just donate or whatever, and then sooner or later I'm going to start having some podcast episodes that only my patrons can listen to, so it's definitely worth signing up for that now. If you have any questions or any suggestions or comments or criticisms, or you want to tell me about myself, I've already told you how to reach me, so go ahead and reach me. You can do it by text, you can also voice record on your phone, send me the voice recording on an email and I will play that out so your voice can be heard by all of the 15 people that listen to me. If you do something cool for like a hobby or for your job, if it's something interesting, let me know. I might want to interview you, innit? I want to get my interview skills all sharpened up. So yeah, hit me up, man. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I'll see you all soon. Bye.